Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks to everyone for being here with us on another Sunday. And today we're going to talk about books. Talk about reading. We're going to talk about the local library system, the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Our guests, Meredith Dickens. She's the collection manager at JMRL. Meredith, welcome.
Hello, Rick. I'm glad to be back.
Yes, we've done this particular type program on summer reading and book suggestions for a number of years, and Meredith has been with us, I believe, every time. Thank you. We also this year have Jess Moore, unrelated. Jess is the young adult librarian at the Crozet Library. Jess, so glad to have you.
Thank you for having me so much. I am very excited for my first time here.
Yeah, I will tell folks, I love my books. I like to read. I have a healthy percentage of books in the house with their own bookcases of unread books waiting to be picked up and read, and am always looking for the next suggestion, the next find on what to read. And that's one of the main reasons for doing this show, is because I have this definitive thought that everyone out there has the same urge. What do I pick up next? What would I like that my friend, my neighbor, my brother, my sister also enjoyed reading? And why not invite the librarians to come on and tell us what's out there? So let's start by, I want to identify exactly what your jobs are. So Jess, let's start with you, the young adult librarian at the Crozet Library. Tell me more.
Sure. So in the before times, my main job was planning events for people ages about 11 to 18 and in person, and maintaining the young adult collection in the Crozet Library. That's shifted a little bit now. I still am planning events. The majority of them are virtual, though, instead of in person. I'm the person that people grab when they have a patron who says, I've got a 13-year-old boy who doesn't like to read, or I've got, you know, a middle schooler who wants to go from younger books to older books and I don't know what to do. And I also run something called the Teen Advisory Board at Crozet. Each branch has one. And it's a group of teens that get together and kind of let us know what kind of events they'd like to see, what they want in the collection, and help really shape what they want their library to be and get involved in the community. So it also means I get to read a fun bunch of books that are written for much younger people. So, you know.
Can I ask how you got pulled into that job, and and I mean whether someone else pulled you into it or whether something within you pulled you into that?
Well, it's a combination of a couple things. I've wanted to be a librarian since I was 8. I actually have a diary entry. I misspelled the word librarian, but I wrote that I wanted to be a librarian when I grew up. And my mom's best friend used to work at the Northside Library. My aunt was a librarian. Her daughter's a librarian. And my dad taught eighth grade at Buford for 36 years. So it's kind of a melding of, you know, loving libraries, loving reading, being the daughter of an educator. And I worked in Northern Virginia for a very long time. And my husband and I decided that we wanted to come home. And this was the library system I grew up in. So I'm just so thrilled that I can be here.
That's great. And Meredith, the collections manager, I have this vision of the job that I always wanted, but that doesn't mean it's accurate. So share your job with us.
Sure. And it is. People's eyes light up when I say the short answer to what my job is that I get to buy all the books.
Yes, yes. But you know, there's always more paperwork and other stuff than that.
Right, right. So we're given a budget, which we have to stay inside, which is the less fun part. But I do get to work with the entire regional library system, deciding or helping to decide, taking input from the patrons and from the staff and from the community as to what books or what titles they want to see on our shelves, and finding the best way to get those titles onto the shelves, and balancing a variety of formats, because we offer books in regular print, in large print, in audiobook, in ebook, in e-audiobook, and DVDs and music CDs. So balancing across, making sure we have accessibility of formats in a variety of formats. I manage the adult collection, and we also have folks who manage children's and YA regionally. And also distributing the books regionally, because we have 8 physical branches and a bookmobile, and they all have their own collections and their own neighborhood that use them and their own slight flavor of what folks like to see on the shelves there. So we to make sure they have what they need, where they need it, and I help the staff keep things in good repair as well.
Wow. Again, our guest today, Jess Moore, young adult librarian at the Crozet branch, and Meredith Dickens, the collections manager for Jefferson Madison Regional Library. You can go to the website, jmrl.org, learn a lot about what the library system as a whole offers, and all the different cool things that are there. And we're going to talk about that throughout the hour, some of the different book clubs and classes and meetings. But let's jump right into some book suggestions. And Jess, first time on the show, we'll let you go first. Give me your first book suggestion for the hour.
So I do have to let you know, I primarily read graphic novels. And for people who don't know, those are basically really long comic books. But it's not usually, you know, Superman or Batman. They have those kind of things. But I prefer graphic novels that are just one story. So a lot of what I have today are stuff that's good for teens and adults. And this first one I have been telling everybody about, and I'm sure they're sick of me talking about it, but it's called Kent State, Four Dead in Ohio by just the name DERF, D-E-R-F. And it's a graphic novel that the author put together through extensive research about the Kent State shooting in 1970 in Kent, Ohio. And, you know, for adults, that's probably not that long ago, but for, you know, all of the teens, that's historical fiction at that point, if you can believe it. And he recreates the last few days of the 4 students who were killed at the shooting. And I should not have finished it at work, because I was trying so hard not to cry, but I was literally speechless at the end. I could not say anything. I was just in awe of the amount of research that went into it, the emotional connection I felt with these characters that are real people, and the different points of view he presents, including a young man who served on the National Guard who was at Kent. So for people who are into, I guess, I don't want to say history because, you know, a lot of people remember that, but for people who lived through that time period or people who want to know more about it, it definitely left an impression with me.
Wow. And Meredith, what's the first book that you want to share?
Well, it's always so much pressure to find one book to share because people have such wide reading tastes. But one book that
it's not the only book that you're going to share. Just the first.
It's like the pressure of the first one. But I think this book has a lot in it. A lot of people will enjoy it. One of the books I enjoyed reading in the last year was When No One Is Watching by Alyssa Cole. It's about a Brooklyn native who's moved back in as a caretaker to her mother. And she bemoans the gentrification of the neighborhood. She interacts with her old neighbors. And she even has several flirty interactions with a guy who has moved in across the street. So it starts off almost like a rom-com. And Alyssa Cole is known for her romance books, which are also fantastic. But soon things in this book turn a little sinister as people begin to disappear. And things in the neighborhood aren't quite right. And corporate evil might be lurking. It's a great, she develops the story, the narrative really well through the characters. There's shifting points of view, so it keeps moving. And I found it a really compelling read.
Wow. I'm always fascinated by some of the first things that get mentioned and where that takes my thought process. I will say that I hadn't really thought much about a graphic work such as what Jess mentioned. But, you know, that reminds me that I just recently finished the graphic version of Slaughterhouse-Five. I don't know if either one of you had read that, but a gentleman... I'm looking it up now. Ryan North with Albert Montes as the illustrator took Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five and turned that into a graphic novel. And if you like Vonnegut's work, or I found that to be... I don't know if disturbing is the right word because it didn't have anything to do with the original book, but it's just the topic itself is brings so much to light about anti-war, and that was having so much art to go with it, and the pictures behind it were, you want to turn the page so carefully that you don't put any thumbprints on it. You like have to clean your fingers before you pick anything up. And that's how I felt about doing this and seeing this book and the hard work that had been put into it.
Yeah, the graphic novel adaptations of classic works have been a hit in the last couple years. It's a fantastic way for new readers to come to the same story if they're more visual, or you can reread the same book. If you've read the original text, reading it in graphic form can change the way you think about some of it. We've seen a lot of those. Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower has been translated into graphic novel format. I'm trying to think of other. There are plenty of other ones as well. Jess, do you have any favorite classic adaptations?
I primarily read graphic novels. I don't know if I read more original stories, but I have found with reluctant readers. That's what we call people who, you know, for whatever reason, just aren't inclined to pick up a book at any age. I found with younger reluctant readers, handing them a graphic novel of a classic just makes it so much easier and less intimidating. And that's because it's easier for them to interpret what's going on in the text because of the images. And, you know, I had one patron whose son was supposed to read the Odyssey next year. And she said, I'm worried that he's not going to be able to do it. So I gave her the graphic novel, and within a week he had read it 3 times. So, you know, that is a really great way to bridge that gap between reluctant readers and the expectations they have in school. And also, I just, Rick, like you said, I just am so blown away by a lot of the art that it just leaves me, you know, I don't know if I want to turn the page because I know what's going to happen too and I can see it. So, you know, looking at my list, I actually mostly have graphic novels, but you know, it's definitely becoming more popular as a medium.
Again, our guests today, Jess Moore and Meredith Dickens, as we talk about Jefferson Madison Regional Library and bring out some suggestions for folks as the school year winds down, as people might be taking some vacations. Let's talk. I want to ask a question or two about, before we take our next break, you have an awful lot of book clubs out there. And Jess, I'll throw this one at you. I want to find out how to form a book club and all that. But I see something called the Spine Crackers Club, a tween book club. How do you get involved with that, and exactly what do they do?
So the Spine Crackers Book Club is run from another awesome YA librarian in a different branch. And to get involved with that book club or any book clubs, you can sign on up online on our website under the Programs tab, under Teens. And with tweens, it can be kids or tweens. And you just sign up with your name and email address. Right now, it's all done through Zoom, so you would get a Zoom link. And with the younger book clubs, they're a little more activity-based sometimes than just a straight discussion like an adult book club. So we might have a craft that goes along with it or a game. But at the heart of it, it really is talking about the book and your feelings about the book and how you would maybe talk about this book to someone else. So it's a really good practice, I think, for younger kids to maybe analyze books in a way that isn't quite as intimidating as something where you're being graded.
If I can say also, I think most of the time with our youth book groups for the kids and the YA book clubs, we're able to provide copies of the book for the kids who sign up for those book groups in advance. And that's sponsored by the Friends of the Library, provides funding for those books. So you don't have to worry about finding extra copies on the library shelf.
Oh, that's cool. All right. Well, let's, on that note, well, let's take our break. We'll be right back to talk with Meredith Dickens and Jess Moore. We'll learn more about various book clubs that are out there, some of the other offerings that we've got going on, and so many more book offerings that I know that they have. Hang tight. Okay. Back talking about the books. Break out your pen and paper, because you're going to start wanting to write things down if you haven't already done so. Of course, the podcast, if you're not listening to it now, will be up shortly, SeavillePodcast.com, because we're making suggestions of books that you should consider reading. You know, at one point in the not too distant past, I went through a time period where I wanted to read some of the classics that I had either been required to read or had somehow gotten skipped in my life where, you know, oh, these are the books that you should have read by now. And so I, you know, you go to the bookstore, you go to the library, but some of them are pretty slim. And so there's not a lot of investment in time to try and read these 600 page books. And so before the show, I went and made a list. What have I got here? 6 books that aren't very complicated that I thought people might enjoy, and I wanted to get the feedback from the two of you and any suggestions for the younger readers from Jess and Meredith, your thoughts and comments for people who might be interested in some classics. So I wrote down Animal Farm. Not a very complicated book in terms of depth. A number of pages, I should say, by what I mean by depth. You can always break out, go to Google and find out the true meaning of the book. But Animal Farm by George Orwell and Brave New World by Huxley and The Outsiders by Hinton and Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury or Metamorphosis by Kafka, Catcher in the Rye by Salinger. And suddenly, after a few weeks, you can start talking about these things and people will go, oh, what a brainiac. And so I was just curious about your thoughts on getting people to read some of the more classic books.
So a really big movement in young adult literature right now is actually retellings of classics. You didn't mention him, but Edgar Allan Poe is actually kind of having a slight resurgence with young people now. I actually had a young woman in TAB, my teen advisory board, say she read the entire collected short stories of his recently. And the reason I bring him up is because there's a new book out called The Initial Insult, which is a retelling of the Cask of, oh, Meredith, help me out with this. It's the one with the guy who gets burnt in the wall. That one.
Amontillado, yeah.
So it's a retelling from two teen girls' points of view. And I think that would really get teens interested in the original story to look it up and see. And Poe, obviously, there are tons of graphic novels because he's creepy and people like doing creepy graphic novels. But for the ones that you listed, a lot of them do have graphic novel versions, and some of them, like Catcher in the Rye and The Outsiders, are still pretty popular with teenagers. And one other option I think they could do, which a lot of people don't realize is not cheating, is audiobooks. Audiobooks still require you to use your brain, and it's a really good way to absorb the information if you don't want to sit down and read. You know, you can still cook or knit, or I would say clean, but that's not realistic for me. So you can do other things while you listen.
And Meredith?
Well, Rick, you mentioned Ryan North earlier. He was the one who helped adapt Fahrenheit 451. He also did a fun project with two Shakespeare titles. One was To Be or Not to Be. It was a Hamlet retelling, and one is a Romeo and Juliet. And he made them into choose your own adventure books. So he really plays with the plot and the characters and injects the original level of humor that you can find in Shakespeare and updates the stories and allows you to interact with the story as you're walking through. Takes that old, you know, choose your own adventure format and brings it up to date. Those are fun to share. One, you mentioned The Outsiders. My favorite trivia moment or fact about The Outsiders that might get a teenager interested in reading it, even though it might feel dated now, is that Essie Hinton was 17 when she wrote that book. She was in high school, which was always a, it's always a great idea that, you know, it was somebody your age, possibly, who wrote this book that has now been lasted for so long. And I just went right to retellings, which is exactly what I thought of on the adult side as well. This is really a big trend in adult fiction. We see Jane Austen retellings in contemporary times, Pride and Prejudice in modern-day India, or lots of Austen retellings, or mysteries. One of my favorite mysteries I read recently was A Study in Scarlet Women by Sherry Thomas. She is, the main character is a woman who works under, she assumes the name of Sherlock Holmes. She has some family connection, and she is just as smart and clever as Sherlock Holmes, and manages to wend her way into solving his crimes. So taking those classic characters and flipping them a little bit for modern audiences helps connect us to the classics in a different way.
Well, also, Meredith, when you're bringing up Sherlock Holmes, there's a series, the Charlotte Holmes Mysteries, and it's not a retelling. It's a it's set in the world where Sherlock Holmes was real and John Watson were real, and Charlotte Holmes is a descendant of Sherlock Holmes, and Jamie Watson is a descendant of John Watson, and they both end up in the same boarding school in New England, and chaos ensues, as it always does. But the author also pulls elements of the original story and puts them in there. So even if you're not familiar, you can understand the story completely, but it might make you curious and say, well, why is the author doing this? Why is the author doing that? What is she referring to? And I think that's a great way to get people more interested in the classics.
And which book was that?
The first one is called A Study in Charlotte.
Okay. And so again, you can always go to the jmrl.org website and search the catalog if you've written down one of the titles or the author during today's show and want to go check it out later. So just toss that out there for listeners. So that sounds pretty interesting. Another one of the classics turned into a little more modern tale to catch the eye of an updated crowd of readers. Meredith, I'm interested in which category gets the most attention from books being checked out or dollars being spent. Are you doing this? And I don't mean like fiction versus nonfiction, but are you spending the money on young adult books? Are you spending them on the mystery books? Are you spending them on history books and something like that?
Sure. All of the above. We're spending money on all of them. We buy what people ask us to buy, and mysteries are always popular. There's a lot of general fiction that we cover, the bestseller list, the thrillers that are coming out. In the last year, two types of adult fiction book have really become popular. I mean, they're always popular, but in the last year, I think because of what's happening outside in the outside world and all of the scariness of a pandemic and everything we've been dealing with, two genres that a lot of people are picking up, what some people call uplit, so uplifting literature. There are books that are general stories with charming characters, very nice and light and gentle, or quirky with nice, comfortable endings, possibly either romances or just general. There's a lot of older neighbor communes with younger neighbor. I'm thinking of the Frederick Bachman books, like A Man Called Uwe, and just books that you can feel cozy in, just to sort of escape into a nice, gentle read. And then on the other end of the spectrum, recently in the last year or so, we've seen a resurgence in horror fiction. So, and not necessarily always just the monsters, but the books that make you feel slightly unsettled or suspenseful. There might be just lingering dread in every corner. And it kind of counterintuitive, but when the world outside is really scary, you might need something else to worry about or something that you can get your hands on to worry about. So we've seen an upsurgence in both of those things, both from what's being published and what's being asked for by the readers.
Now, are you referring to that? Is that more in the adult section? And Jess would give me a different answer versus what the Teen Advisory Board is being sent to request?
I mean, I think I have had a bunch of teens ask me recently for scarier books. And I agree with Meredith. I think having something scary that you have control over is probably a lot more comforting. You know, I think the big movement in YA is something called Own Voices, where it's fiction written by people whose background kind of matches the characters they're writing. So, you know, if it's a book about a young Black man living in America, it would be written by a young Black man living in America. And the popularization of that, I think, is because young people not only want to see themselves in literature, but they want to learn about other people from a source that they can trust. So I think, at least with my teens, that's been super popular, but I agree with Meredith. I think horror has definitely become very popular. And fluffy romance is always popular amongst teens, but even though they probably wouldn't admit it to my face, they're still pretty popular.
So, a question to both of you, and Meredith, I'll let you go first. If a book is requested, do you specifically have to read it, or does it have to get your stamp of approval on it? And Jess, when it gets to you, does someone on the board have to read it and get the stamp of approval for it to be requested, rather than just, oh, here's the title, let's go get it?
Sure, I can start with that question. There is a suggestion for purchase form. You can find it on our website, or if you're in a branch, you can fill out a little paper form or have a staff member fill out the online form for you. All of those suggestions come to my office, first of all, and we take a look to see if it's available for purchase. Sometimes people ask us for books that are out of print, and then we're able to send them to an interlibrary or get an interlibrary loan from a book that might be on a shelf in a library somewhere else. We can borrow for them because we can't purchase books that are too old. But most of them we can find. We find them in the format that the person would like to access it in, whether it's ebook or print book or audiobook. One of the other things that people say when they hear what my job is, they say, well, you must read a lot of books. And I spend more time reading about books than I read the actual books. So to answer your direct question, no, we don't have to read the book ourselves, but we do look for reviews in library journals or the mainstream media. We look for articles, whether it has a local interest, is the author a proven author, all sorts of things about the book to help us judge, is it going to be a good fit for our readership? We are able to purchase almost every, I think 85% of the patron suggestions that we receive, we're able to purchase the book and put it on the shelf. And sometimes they are books that we already we're going to get. So you can also, because people will hear, they have a favorite author and they hear they're coming out with a new book in the fall. Patrons can also use that suggest a purchase form to sort of go on the list. Like if it's a David Baldacci book, we know we're going to get that book, but you don't want to have to remember in the fall to go on the holds list for it. So a patron can put their name in on the suggestion form and we'll keep track of it. And when we do end up ordering it, when it's closer to the publication date, we'll add them to a holds list and let them know, hey, it's on its way.
So, Jess, is the Teen Advisory Board assisting this process in any way? And would that include checking the book out and going appropriate or inappropriate for our age group?
So with the Teen Advisory Board, usually when they're recommending books, it's ones they've already picked up from the library. And for them, I do tap them a lot to do displays or help make book lists or stick bookmarks in books that say so-and-so recommended this book. But occasionally I will have somebody say, oh, I heard about this book and I know you don't have it. And usually I'll just point them to the purchase suggestion form. But sometimes I'll look up the book and do exactly what Meredith does. I'll look at the publication information. I will look at reviews and see how this works. I'll see, you know, is this something that's actually, you know, something for teens? And a lot of publishers will also list reading levels on the books, which is a really big help. But what helps me most with the teens is when they actually check the books out when they come to the library and then they come back and they share that information with me and with their fellow teens.
Excellent. Again, we are talking with Jess Moore. She's the young adult librarian at Crozet Library, and Meredith Dickens. She's the collections manager, Jefferson Madison Regional Library, jmrl.org. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get on top of many more suggestions for books because it's getting close to time where hopefully folks will have a greater opportunity to relax with their books. Hang tight. And here we are again talking about our books, our favorite books, and our book suggestions with Meredith Dickens and Jess Moore from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. So you have a head start on where to get them, what to get. Reach out to your library. So, Jess, you had led on that you have some specific authors that you wanted to share since it's the month of May.
Yes, May is Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month in the United States. And I have a couple authors whose books I really enjoyed or who are writing about really interesting different topics. One of them is Tracy Chi. She wrote a book called We Are Not Free. And it's told from the different point of view of Japanese American teenagers during internment in the 40s. But what's different about this is it doesn't look or feel like a historical fiction book. You know, you remember picking up a historical fiction book and it's got a picture of a sad person wearing, you know, clothing of that time period looking out a window or something. This feels like a contemporary book that I think teens would really connect to, and I think extends to a point where adults would really enjoy that. And along a similar topic, George Takei, I think it was last year, had a graphic novel called They Called Us Enemy about his specific experience with Japanese internment. And another author, Kiku Hughes, wrote a fictionalized version of kind of her family history about a teen girl who gets sucked back in time to the same internment camp as her grandmother. And the way that she uses colors and time is just really interesting. And I keep saying I get emotional about books. I think you're just going to find out I get emotional about everything. So that's probably not too much of a surprise there. And a little differently, there's a really cute series. The first book is out. The second book is coming out this year, called St. Rosetta's Academy. And it's retelling of fairy tales from different characters' points of view. And the author herself is Sandhya Menon, and she's Asian American. And her first book is a retelling of Beauty and the Beast, which I know it's shocking, a librarian's favorite fairy tale is Beauty and the Beast, but it's just a really cute, I think, an uplit kind of romance for teens that would help them, you know, kind of get through a crummy year. And the last author I want to mention is Jean Luan Yang. He is a phenomenal graphic novel artist and author. And he had a couple books come out in this year alone, including one about his real life experiences as a teacher documenting a basketball team at his high school, and about how he went from this, you know, nerdy guy who didn't understand sports and didn't like sports to a nerdy guy who ended up passionately caring about his school's basketball team because he cared about the kids on the team. And then he did a retelling of Superman Smashes the Klan from the point of view of Asian American kids. And he just has this really wonderful art and this way of bringing you into the story and really caring about the characters. And his appeal, I think, transcends almost all age levels.
That sounds pretty awesome. I like, there were several of those that really caught my ear that I think I'm going to go out and look for.
I hope so.
So one of the things that did come to my attention there was you mentioned, like, this author had written this book that was going to be followed up by this book, that put me in the mindset of the number of authors in the current world that almost always have to write a two-piece or a three-piece trilogy, or have some, they have to present their book as this is going to be a series of some sort. The character, we can make the character return and return and return. Am I wrong about that?
No, I mean, I think that's pretty, you know, common, at least in young adult books. It's almost very rare to find a standalone young adult book nowadays.
I picked up, because I have my own special feel for young adult, and maybe even, I don't know what the age group falls for, but so many of the books that are probably written for the 12-year-olds are actually, I'm like, gosh, if I was 12, could I even read that? But they seem, the artwork and the verbiage seem to be much greater than that, and the storytelling is greater than that, and I enjoy them as an adult. But they always seem to have these ongoing series, and two of them that I have picked up and enjoyed over the last year, there was one set of books by a woman named Kate Milford, the Greenhouse Glass books, which I enjoyed, and then another that I just found in the last month or two by an author from the United Kingdom, and I don't remember if he was Scottish, called Monstrous Devices, which was really cool, about a young boy whose grandfather gave him this metallic toy robot, which took on a life of its own on occasion, and the goal was to get rid of it or keep it. And I found both of those, the Monstrous Devices and the Greenhouse Glass, which both had follow-ups. I found those two books to be really interesting and sort of above their age and certainly worthy of an adult to read them.
I mean, I think you'll find, and I mean, I have to confess, I'm not just reading these books because I'm a young adult librarian. I'm reading these books because I genuinely enjoy them. A lot of adults really like these middle grade and teen books. And I think it's because they do tell good stories and, you know, they follow a lot of that classic archetypes, you know, the saga that people have to follow. And, you know, after a particularly rough year, I think people are turning to literature as well that they might find some comfort in. And, you know, even newer young adult and middle grade, I call it middle grade reading, just can feel a little bit more comfortable sometimes than adult books.
Meredith, so have you found yourself going back to a particular genre? Do you, I don't want to use the phrase get stuck, but do you like read numerous books from the same genre before maybe you find another book that takes you somewhere else?
Yes, exactly. I think I get into trends where I'm going from one author who recommends another author in the same genre, and I, you know, follow a little trend, and then that's enough of that, so I've got to mix it up, and, you know, I was reading some romances, so now I'm going to read a mystery. Recently, I've been reading, you know, I think that a lot of people over the last year have had a hard time with attention span too. So it's actually been hard to finish a book for a lot of people. And at times in the last year, it's been the same for me. But I've been reading I've been reading things that allow me to dip in and out of a book, you know, when my brain can engage. I've also been reading a lot of cookbooks. Recently, it allows me to travel, read cookbooks about international food. So I get to travel and see all the beautiful pictures and imagine all the amazing ingredients from around the world. And so, for instance, like Oaxaca by Bricia Lopez reminded me of a trip I took to Mexico with my husband right before, or it was the last trip we took before lockdown. And I'm also looking forward to Coconut and Sambal by Lara Lee, which is getting a lot of great reviews about Indonesian cooking. And the stories about in these cookbooks, he tells about the chef's life, if they are immigrants, how they came to America, and how their family and culture influences their cooking, and also how their experiences in America and American cuisine influences, you know, might be melded into that. So I get a lot of cultural information, a lot of imagination and traveling, and also delicious food out of the cookbooks. I've been doing that a lot lately.
Oh, my. When I hear somebody who talks about reading a cookbook, I'm always fascinated by someone who can do that. But I guess cookbooks are written differently than others.
A lot of the new cookbooks are more essay books with recipes. They will talk about the author's life or experiences traveling, and there's a lot of text in between the recipes. So I'm not just reading lists of ingredients, but there's a lot of cultural background and a lot of things, and also a lot of pretty pictures too.
Now, I was given as a gift, which I did read, all of it, was a book that was sort of a cookbook that provided the recipes for specific foods that were key parts of major books. And so if you were reading Hamlet, and there was the key food in Hamlet, then this author listed the ingredients on how to make it, or the Three Musketeers, or Little Red Riding Hood, and it told the, there were two paragraphs telling you, and I've got the book already read and put away in the bookshelf, so I can't go fetch it. But it was really interesting to sort of get the background on why the food was there and some of the ingredients that cannot be found anymore, or if they can, why they were used, and important to that specific place and time. And if you wanted to make it today, why it might be different or difficult, or what would make it so delicious but difficult to make, rather than in, you know, 1572 or, you know, just out of the fairy tale book. And it was really fascinating to read, but I haven't made any of those recipes. So we briefly skimmed over mysteries. I always thought the mystery shelf was the largest shelf at the Jefferson Madison Regional Library book sale, which I must say is heartbreaking to me every time we've had to postpone it because of COVID. So hoping that the fall book sale gets to come back. But the mystery section seems to be the largest. So are there any mystery book suggestions this year?
Sure, there are plenty of them. One which I actually have next to me to start this weekend, and this ties into the food writing that we were talking about. There's a whole trend of culinary mysteries, cozy mysteries that may have recipes in the back, but they're, you know, a chef or the owner of a B&B will find a dead body and have to investigate. But the one I'm looking forward to this weekend is Mia Mancinella's Arsenic and Adobo. Actually, I don't know what it's about because I haven't started it yet. It is a mystery. It's a culinary mystery. I have heard it starts as sort of a rom-com, but it's got a chorus of Filipino aunties and an adorable dachshund as a character and lots of food, and it's a cozy mystery too. But they're not all cozy mysteries. There are also one of the good series recently is Rosalie Connect's Who is Vera Kelly? If you're a reader who likes suspense and a little bit of history, psychological denseness of Patricia Highsmith and Graham Greene's sense of place and character observations, maybe the intensity of a James Bond adventure, you might find all of those in Who is Vera Kelly? And the books that follow that in that series. And then we were talking about, comfort reads too. One of the popular mysteries, it's sort of a classic village mystery, The Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman. It's a retirement community in the English countryside, and the characters who live in this retirement village all have they have developed this Thursday Murder Club, which is they all meet together and talk about true crime. And then there's a murder that happens in their midst, and they're all delightful characters with quirks, and they work with the village constabulary, or they possibly work around the village constabulary to find clues and interrogate witnesses, and it's just a delightful cozy mystery.
Nice. So, Jess, I'll ask you to toss out another book suggestion, but we've just got a minute or two left. And so I want to make mention specifically that there are an awful lot of book clubs out there. When you go to the jmrl.org website, and there's the Mystery Book Club, the Bring Your Own Book Club, the Monday night book group, the Wednesday evening book group, the Philosophy Book Club, the Literary Masterpieces Book Group, the Page Masters Book Club, there's one for kids, the Stories Stars, there's the Blossoming Bookworms Story Time, the Wee Readers Rhyme Time, and then based on what we were just talking about a minute or two ago, the Cookbook Book Club. So please, folks, make use of the jmrl.org website. So, Jess, I've left you with about a minute to make a suggestion or so on finishing us up today.
Sure. And unsurprisingly, my last recommendation is also a graphic novel, and it's one that straddles teen and adult. It's called Dancing at the Pity Party. And I really think after this year, it's a really important book. It's a book about grief, but it's told in a humorous way. It's about, that's a true story of the author Tyler Federer. Her mom died of cancer while she was 19. And the whole book kind of starts with her relationship with her mom and then goes through watching her mom struggle with cancer, eventually passing away, and then dealing with the grief. And I think, you know, a lot of people have sadly lost loved ones this year or know people who have. And this book, I think, is a really beautiful way to address your own grief or to see how to help people who have lost their own loved ones.
It's fascinating for people to, if you're not paying attention, and I certainly fall closer into that category than I do otherwise. Fascinating at the number of graphic novels that are so amazing. They're not comic books. Meredith Dickens with us, the collections manager, Jess Moore, young adult librarian at the Crozet Library. Thanks to you both for all the fabulous suggestions on today's show. All right, folks, we'll be back next week. Join us again. Bye-bye.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at cvillepodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake-Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.